head on.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
The wind, you feel it fresh in your face. That wind can change the world, and that change begins in Appalachia. Go to coalriverwind.org. Coal companies bombing Appalachia must be stopped. You can do that. We can change America with the Coal River Wind Project. We can't do it without you. coalriverwind.org. Go there for yourself, for our future. coalriverwind.org.
This is a public service announcement. Quick info!
There's a new type of music program coming to the horn.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying a scam. I said never. But I won't heed
the battle call. Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Keep me down on K Street. Have
the People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch is gone and Kelly have to lose that on the list and then goes on and on.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
Now, what now?
Cut your flag, the gal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Head on.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, hey, hey! Good day!
Hey, everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, filling in for a final night this week. It's been a great, great time. Been great to connect with everybody again, because, you know, we hadn't been on in a while. But, you know, all good things must come to an end. And even better, Bob will be back tomorrow night. And, you know, tonight is normally prayer meeting, but, you know, I mean, it's still unofficially or officially whatever prayer meeting. But I just didn't have kind of that well to draw from this morning. Got to remember, you know, down here, it's still this morning. So, you know, I just didn't feel like I could do it justice. And, you know, I can't do that. I can't do that whole Reverend Brother Bob thing. I just don't got it. How you going, everybody? Welcome, welcome. It's Wednesday. Happy hump day. As normal, please, it's just, let's just make this free form. I want to hear from you all today. I mean, I got stuff lined up. The best thing that could happen today would be for the phones to be full so John's left to his own devices as little as possible. That's all I'm telling you. I had a bit of a day yesterday. And there's a couple things in the news today that have me really angry, and I'm kind of worried that if I were to, say, go freestyle, I might get myself into trouble. So, but we'll get there, we'll get there. I'm having one of those days where I'm feeling, you know, the spirit of Bill Hicks kind of like right up my spine. In so many ways. So, as usual, to get it on the program, on the phone, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON, that's 877-443-2366, or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. And the email rolls in to John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com. Love to know what's on your mind today. I mean, it's the day after, you know, a few primaries, and we now have Orly Tate. I mean, can we just, like, make this more on Monday? You know, Secretary of State is like, you know, one of those bits in the ballot box that no one really pays attention to. You know, it's like you stick somebody up there, and the people that go, like, you know, down the party ticket column, tick, 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 bang, you got a Secretary of State. And so, you know, I mean, come on, you know, this woman is like, you know, the back of Rolling Stone bloody, you know, lawyer or whatever, mail order lawyer. You know, shortcut, easy way to everything. And, you know, now, how's it feel, Republicans? You got the birther queen on your California ticket. How good's that? That's just a thing of beauty. I think that's hysterical. I'm just waiting to see the other, you know, how are the other Republicans in California going to handle this? You know? I don't even know anything about the candidates, but they're probably legitimate candidates. And they're going to have to stand there with the birther queens and go, I want to see a raised seal! I'm a foreign national, claiming that the president isn't an American. I am a walking contradiction. And you'd think for someone that's supposed to be a hairdresser, she'd get better wigs. If it's not a wig, oh dear. So, you know, this is the kind of mood that I'm in today. So, but now, actually, something that kind of happened yesterday that's fairly important in the ballot, on the ballot in California, is really in jeopardy because of the old eBay queen. And that's all a bit weird. And so, you know, and again, is this, see, here we go with that whole stagecraft thing I was talking about yesterday, you know. Media goes, talk, you know, Orly Tate, da 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 da. look here. But then there were some real issues on the primary ballot. Let me get this link up here. There's not that many links on today's show post. It was a bit pushed for time this morning, or this evening for the rest of you all. Here from energyboom.com. California primary results, the state of the state on clean energy. Tuesday's California primary results contain both good news and bad news for the state's prospects of leading the nation to clean energy. The good news, California voters said no to Proposition 16. Check this out. What opponents called a power grab by California utility PG&E to require communities to have a supermajority in order to choose nonprofit utilities or any utility choice other than PG&E. So much for that whole free market thing. And just like in federal politics, majority just doesn't do anymore. You got to have a super majority. It's got to be super. The private utility giant funded the proposition to the tune of $46.1 million. Despite the opposition being underfunded, PG&E still lost. The people versus corporate interests score one for California. California's Republicans, however, cannot be said to have done well by clean energy. Exhibit A, Meg Whitman, Republican gubernatorial candidate. Ms. Whitman of eBay fame trounced Steve Poizner of the GOP nomination in part by running as a right-wing corporatist and in larger part by throwing a whole lot of money at winning, a record $80 million. Seriously. Can we, like, put a rule up that you can't personally, out of your own money, spend more on your campaign than the salary for the job? I mean, really. Okay, but here's where it gets juicy. Whitman's ads show her in front of a pretty backdrop of windmills and solar panels, but the reality is that she has promised that her first act in office will be to suspend implementation of AB 32, California's landmark greenhouse gas emissions reduction and clean energy bill. Considering all the studies showing how AB 32 creates jobs and how much money has been invested in the state because of its leadership on clean energy, it seems a foolish position for the self-proclaimed pro-business candidate. But it is a position the Tea Partiers and Texas oil companies want her to take, the same interests that are funding a November ballot position to suspend AB 32. It's interesting to note that eBay is supporting AB 32, even if their former boss is not. Whitman will go up against once and hoping to be future governor of California, Jerry Brown. Brown is a supporter of AB 32. Exhibit B, Carly Fiorina. Oh, jeez, the compact woman. Fiorina, who was once famously dismissed from Hewlett-Packard, reinvented herself in 2008 as a surrogate for the McCain campaign. She's gone through another reinvention now as a candidate for the U.S. Senate. Fiorina will run against three-term Senator Barbara Boxer, the first female chair of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works. Sure of her anointment as the GOP candidate, Fiorina started running ads prior to the primary, taking on Boxer for calling climate change a threat to national security. Well, she has a right to say that, Ms. Fiorina. Because the intelligence industry and infrastructure says that it's a security issue because of the mass migration that's going to be happening. That's kind of already started in some places. But it continues on. Fiorina, once a supporter of addressing climate change, now accuses Boxer of worrying about the weather instead of terrorists. See? Look over there. Stagecraft. Look over there. Look over there. Look on stage, not off stage. Fiorina, too, seems to be running towards the Tea Party right. Fiorina, like Whitman, has lots of money, and the two gal pals are already talking about how excited they are to be together at the top of the GOP ticket. So, some really great moves in California could be. Shot the shit. We're going to get to the phones in just a second. Agnes, be right there. You know, someone like Fiorina has to be a Tea Party candidate because she's been trying to get everybody to forget about her past, her business past, how she ran Hewlett-Packard into the bloody ground. And the easiest way to do that is with a bunch of uneducated people who live their lives through willful ignorance. So I guess you chose the right party, Miss Fiorina. So let's go to the phones. Susan, how are you, my dear? Susan? Hello?
Got me?
Yeah, now I got you. How are you? Susan, can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me, Susan?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. What
yeah?
Welcome. What do you got?
Well, the reason I'm calling in is not the fact that dear old Meg and Carly managed to buy themselves a candidacy. That was pretty much given. And it isn't the fact that Orly is whacked out. We all knew that. The thing that's gotten me going is the White House's reaction to the Arkansas race.
Oh, yeah.
They basically dissed unions.
What the hell was that all about, Susan?
I don't know, but I do know they've just pretty much guaranteed that the left is going to go blue, going to go red, because all of the Democrats are going to stay home.
I just can't believe how just disconnected. How can a Democratic president go after the unions for backing a candidate that, you know, supports their views? And, you know, I really don't see the logic.
How is this going to play all over the country? How is this going to play all over the country? Obama, you twit.
Yeah. I mean, David from Maine, I'm starting to really think, you know, his line that Obama's working really hard for a one-term presidency. I think you might
yeah.
be, you know, I mean, there are things that just make absolutely no sense. And I'll tell you, the subject that I don't actually really want to get on too much today, but it's really got me pissed off, is after what Israel did to the flotilla and all the lies and all the propaganda, we go around and turn around and...
Not so much a word.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
the
yeah.
White House.
Nothing. But then we go up and we're Israel's bitch, and we go and do more sanctions on Iran. And like all I see
yeah,
is,
and then we jump all, and then the White House jumps all over Helen Thomas.
And you know what?
We don't jump all over Israel for pumping an American full of bullets from above.
Yeah, and
in
with,
international waters.
And you know,
that's piracy. The last time I looked.
And if it's just freaking me out.
I keep hearing this line that my father's dead, but he had a lot of favorite lines. But one of his most favorite lines was, "You had to study. Nobody is born that stupid."
I think that might be, you know, the American version of willful ignorance. We pound so much disinformation into the dialogue that, and people just go, oh, that's so much easier to feed my hatred. I'll go with that. Doesn't matter what any of it, what the reality is. But I really got to wonder what is up with this president when you're going to go after the unions. And I just cannot, you know, it's not like it's the union was out there busted for something. Yeah, then you go after the union. A union.
And I got you. Can I say something really offensive that will really offend the Republicans, assuming any are listening?
Go for it.
I was around when Reagan ran for the first time. And I said, God help this country if he gets elected. I was right. You know what? I would dearly like to dig that man up and stomp on him.
I think a whole lot of people would like to. You know, I mean, that was one of the best political scams in history. I was just, you know, kind old Ronnie, you know, and he...
I don't think the Secret Service can jump on me for saying something like that about somebody who's already dead, though. Really want to kill him again.
Well, I'm still waiting for the day that Margaret Thatcher goes, because Gail will be booking the ticket so she can go and dance and urinate on her grave. But I don't, you know, and they're two peas in from the same pod, those two. But you know, the Reagan thing, I notice all the time. It all goes back to the Reagan era, because, you know, I've talked about this before. That was when I was in grade and high school, and I was that generation of the Reagan Revolution as education started to be slowly dismantled from the arts down, and the me-me-me-ism.
I was the generation of the boomers, so I know what you missed.
And you know, we were taught to be...
And, oh, God, did you miss out?
Well, and we were taught to be so apathetic. This is the thing that I remember, and I think it's the disease that is killing us at the moment. You know, and it's my generation right now, about 40 years of age, that should be coming into their political early primes. And I'm worried that...
I had people who would jump up on the desks and scream at us, what do you think? Think!
People don't...
And that's what they would demand of us.
And I even look at my own history, and it was the teachers that actually challenged me or made it in some way compelling, I did well in those classes. But the people that were just, here's the assignment, fill out the answers, you know, nothing outside of what the book is and the checklist that we now have that says that we educated you.
And do the flashcards.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, God.
Yeah. So, you know, and like I say, you know, the sense of apathy. It's like as I watch people go, you know, so the Gulf's full of oil. Big deal. We need the energy. And the complete apathy towards anyone that's affected. And the inability to...
Hey, I got news for you. It's not just one plume of oil.
Oh. It's
not just one oil leak.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of them.
And there's
a lot of those rigs are leaking big time.
Well, and at this one site they're talking about last night, at least on Oberman, they're talking about that there may just be now oil just seeping from the sea floor.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there are other rigs that didn't sink. They are leaking. There's several that are leaking big time. Huge slicks. They're dumping dispersants, but you see, nobody notices.
Because we got the camera focused on the pipe that BP will allow us to see. So again, it comes down to that stagecraft thing. Everybody look here.
These aren't BP rigs. These are all... They're trying to go into that Nigerian bay.
Well, I mean, the fact is, with what's with the event that's taking place right now in the Gulf of Mexico, it's becoming, you know, it's becoming obvious and being shown to be true that the oversight, what there was of it, was completely undermined and completely bypassed in this situation. Why should anyone of any kind of mind capacity at all believe that any of the other rigs are any safer, any better maintained, any of this? So, yeah, it is. I mean, we know that there are leaking rigs out there, and I would imagine that, you know, this is where we need to, like...
And they're not doing a damn thing about them.
They got to shut them all down. They got to shut them all down until
they
they're all...
Shut them all down. Get inspectors in there. Find out which ones are leaking. And they're not doing it. And that's on Obama.
Yeah, and relief, and all systems that don't have relief wells drilled already need to drill them before they can start back up.
That's over 1,300 wells.
I think it's a no-brainer. It is such a no-brainer. The losses, you know, where I love this, you know, you can't. You seem to, in some circles, not be able to include the damage to the environment and other people's businesses in the equation of the economics. It all is like, no, we can't talk about that. It's all about the price of oil and the cost that it, you know, all of that. And it's just, you know, again, it's like the biggest externalization of a cost ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, that doesn't apply. But if you put it into the equation, it would become very obvious that the oil we get out of the ocean that way is not worth the risk, because this is what happens.
No.
But we're not honest about it. It's this willfully ignorant, go along to get along, as long as I'm okay, fuck my neighbor, and it's apathy. It always comes down to apathy for me.
And it just kills me, because we have the technology to get around it. If you put photovoltaic cells in the southwest, it doesn't take a very big patch, and you can power the entire bloody grid.
Yep. 100 square miles of solar geothermal in the deserts of California would power the entire U.S. grid. End of story.
Yeah, the whole thing.
And, you know...
But you see, that forces you to think.
Well, and did you...
And that forces you to give up your little...
Did you catch what I was reading while you were on hold, though, about this, the Proposition 16 that PG&E tried to ram through California? Which was basically saying that... Because California's got a thing up, basically, that, you know, if a community or whatever... gets a majority vote to go with a non-profit energy company or someone other than PG&E, they could. Now, PG&E went, well, we're going to spend $46 million to push the idea that you now have to have a supermajority to do such a thing. But they lost. With all the money that they put into it, they still lost. So on that one, it's a win for California. But, you know... again, you know, they talk about the free market of it. And isn't part of the free market is people being able to choose?
Yeah, you would think so.
But
California, the one thing that did pass was that California thing where they're going to take away your choice.
Which is this?
They've done away with the primaries.
Oh, yeah. So... Now it's like, is this just free-for-all state politics?
No, they take the top two candidates, whatever party, it doesn't matter.
Ooh.
Top two Democrats, top two Republicans, top two independents, doesn't matter.
Now, on the surface, part of the concept I like, as far as opening it up to other than the main two, because I do think that the American two-party system is part of its problem. Just like here, the two big parties are just as bought by a lot of the same interests whenever they're in power. And they kowtow to the same people time and time again. But here, this just sounds like making it a complete and utter free-for-all. What about including other parties in the primaries? And then the top candidates.
But you see, there aren't going to be any primaries.
Yeah, I'm understanding that. I could see how they would have sold this, but doing it from that direction is really weird. That's going to be a mess. And now with Citizens United, you know, going to end up with some
money is going to go gaga.
Going to end up with some corporate flack. They're going to be like, look, go serve 8 years, you know, bend over for us, and when it's all done, you're set for life. Not going to be hard to find someone to sell out the state when they're like, don't worry about it, you'll be taken care of. Just do this. 8 years of your life, wearing shit, lie to people, it's all good. We'll protect your ass. In fact, we'll work on getting you citizenship somewhere else. This next election season, I think, is going to be an absolute joke, and it's not going to be funny.
This next election, unless they figure out a way to get around Citizens United, will be the last election.
Well, this
election that we had that elected Obama will be the last election.
Amen.
This country will have.
Amen. I'm with you there, and that's what I thought.
Unless they get around Citizens United.
Yeah. That is, when Jim rang up yesterday, and, you know, he proposed the whole, you know, Bilderberg thing, and, you know, Sandra kind of backed me up with, like, who needs a secret society? They're doing it right in front of us. You don't need men in dark places when they're on K Street, they're on Wall Street, they're on Pennsylvania Avenue, running the show right in front of us, and just sitting there looking at the general public, going, just keep giving us the flesh.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to have some idea of what we are headed for, go down to your local video store or Netflix and rent the movie Rollerball with James Caan.
Yep.
And listen to, ladies and gentlemen, please stand for our corporate anthem.
Yep. I mentioned it yesterday when the day that I woke up and read about that decision. I went over to my neighbors. I said, mark it on the calendar. You know, unless this is, you know, overturned some way, the American democracy is over. And I know that sounds like a big deal, but it's over. It's just been sold out to corporate interests. Lock, stock, barrel have the title. It's not a good look. And I just...
If I had the ability, I would leave this country.
And that's a really sad... That's a really, really sad thing to hear. You know, when you have people who just feel like their own country is no longer their own, and not in the way that the Tea Partiers do, where it's like, oh, the brown people are taking over. But, you know, when...
Yeah, my husband, two wars, would leave this country.
Yeah. Yeah. And how shocked are you that we are here now? You know? I mean, the fact that we are actually here now, how much of a disappointment after all we went through with Bush and Cheney that it could seem to get worse.
With Bush and Cheney, I'm not at all surprised. I knew it was going to start, it was going to be bad when Reagan got in. It was just a question of degree. I just did not realize how horribly bad.
Yeah, I mean, I always, you know, I didn't have any doubts about him being a leftist. But, geez, some of this stuff, you know, if there's a time that he should actually be backing the unions where, you know, the American job market is now turning all casual. And contract and full-time jobs are disappearing. And this is something that I've lived through because the Howard government brought that whole thing in 10 years ago and forced a whole bunch of people that were permanent employees and gave their employers the right to just cancel whatever deal they had and said, you're now a contractor, you now have to supply all your own insurance, it's all your own liability, even if we fuck up, and you're at a fixed rate of pay for whatever the time is, there's no overtime, there's no nothing, there's no this, there's no that, we won't even supply water on the job site. And that's where you're going.
The, my job was, one of the reasons I really disliked Carly Fiorina was I used to do technical support for HP printers.
Right, that's right, you have experience from that time.
Oh, yeah, and they made no bones about the fact that they wanted all of our jobs out of the country. And the quality of the machines that came out over a period of time gradually just went down the tube. And we finally got to the point, us tech support workers, where when the company was screwing over a customer, we happen to have Carly Fiorina's office number, so we gave the customer her office number.
Ah, nice! Love it. That's fantastic.
Oh, yes, we did.
I love it. I love it. And she's just perfect for the Tea Party. They will never look at what she did in the past. They'll take everything she says on face value. And, you know, if you don't want your past coming back to haunt you, go with the party that doesn't actually know anything.
Yeah. HP made, before Carly Fiorina got in, they made printers that were slightly overpriced, but at the same time, we were getting calls from people who owned the original office jet. The original laser jet, I mean.
Yeah.
The first laser printer, which was about 5 feet square. Huge thing. And it was about 25 years old at that time. And they were calling us up, mad as all get out, because they couldn't find toner cartridges. The machines were working great. They just needed toner cartridges. So we'd tell them where to get the toner. You know, you couldn't kill them with a ball peen hammer.
Yeah, and then printers became cheaper to buy than new cartridges.
And then the machines that were produced under Fiorina, let me put it this way. Anything produced after a laser jet 4300, don't buy it.
There, you've heard it from someone that knows. I do remember that, you know, for a long time it was just like, used to say buy HP, don't buy HP anymore. You know, it's pretty much everywhere on the internet. But I'm going to move on, Susan. Thank you very much. I got David hanging on. But thanks for everything you do. Thanks for blogging. And, you know, hopefully someone will smack this president in the back of the head the right way and be like, hello, your base, mate. Your base.
One can always hope.
All right. We'll talk to you soon,
that's
Susan.
That's all we've got left anymore, so.
Yeah, that's for sure. You take care.
You have a nice day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was our blogger, Susan, here for Head On with Bob Kincaid. And moving on, David from Maine. How you going, David? Is it David from Maine?
Yes.
Yes, mate. How are
yes,
you, buddy?
Yes, it is. Well, I know this is going to surprise you, but I guess we'll talk a little bit about primaries, and I'll tell you the most interesting story out of all of them.
Okay.
Is this this Democratic primary for Senate, Alvin Green.
Which state?
Have you heard
this?
About this, John?
Which one's this?
Alvin Green in South Carolina. He won the Democratic primary for Senate.
Oh, okay. Because all the coverage there has been on the Tea Party Republican who had the two guys come out and claim they had affairs or something. Like, it was really, really kind of.
Well, let me see what you think about the info on this, and tell me if you start calling BS in a minute. Green, a 32-year-old unemployed Army veteran, raised no money in his short primary campaign against Vic Rawl. Green had no campaign website. Strike one. No staff, and paid the $10,400 filing fee with his own money. While Rawl raised more than $230,000 in campaign across the state. Nonetheless, Green posted a 59% to 41% win over Rawl Tuesday night. Right. On the Huffington Post right now, he's being asked to withdraw because they have found some obscene photos with a college student.
So now
you have a scandal on your hands, but it's all suspicious from the get go. I was reading an interview with him. The way he answered questions, he wasn't surprised that he won. He was very aloof at how he got the money. John, it's just BS all across the board. And then they talk about some of the political operatives in South Carolina. They talked about the Twitter reaction. The Twitter reaction is what interested me, too, because a lot of the Republican operatives were really celebrating that they nominated this guy. So pretty much what's in the water right now is that a lot of people believe that Green was paid to run. That's how he was able to get the jump, because they supplied him the money, and they probably supplied him the voting machines, too.
Well,
I don't know that much about Vic Rawl, but I'm calling BS all on this campaign. And anyone who everyone needs to backpedal away from this guy. Because, like I said, the interview I read, I wouldn't touch this guy.
I know that I mean, South Carolina is just crazy politically. Anyway,
I know.
That's the home of Mr. Appalachian Trail, right? Sanford.
Right.
And it just seems to be, you know, I love these, you know, supposedly Southern Christian states, and they seem to have, you know, more of this just kind of ugly crap going on all the time. It does sound like bullshit to me. And, okay, so, like, am I following this, am I getting this right? Because I'm
a 32-year-old guy who lives with his mother. By the way, he lives with his mother.
Got 59% of the vote.
Nothing's wrong with that, but there's nothing wrong with that. But you know, the fact that when they asked him in the interview, where did you get the money? It's like, oh, it's nothing. I mean, 10 grand is nothing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in this day and age, when people are having trouble, you know, getting, you know. Their mortgages together, and this guy's unemployed and comes up with 10 grand?
And again, here's the other thing why I think they rigged this election completely, the Republicans being the people, is when they asked him, John, when they asked him if he was a surprise he won the nominee, he's like, nah, I kind of expected it.
Was that same assuredness that George W. Bush had with his dad on election night in 2000?
It might be. It was in print, so I didn't get the specific measurements of how his reaction was.
Okay, fair enough.
But you know the thing about this, John, and I want to say I had my I was telling you that in the chat room yesterday that Blanche Lincoln was going to win because of voting machines, and I just said that just a cynical blurb, right? And then I hear Malloy talking about Blanche Lincoln and voting machines, and I was like,
here we go again.
I mean, people, you got to wake up. The Democrats, especially the DLCers, they will sink the progressives any way they can.
Oh, absolutely. I have no doubt about it. And, you know,
I mean, there's no ethics in this. I mean, why people think that the Democrats won't cheat as much as the Republicans is insane to me. They will.
I don't know if I'd go quite there, because, I mean, there's just the Republican history
of
racial shit.
I'm talking about the DLCers.
Oh, yeah.
And the ones who want to keep the power structure in place.
Okay.
Don't do it.
Okay. Blanche Lincoln is one of those people that I think is actually, and I think I believe a lot of people, you know, have this sense, that she's always been a Republican to run as a Democrat to undermine a Democratic majority. Lieberman, great example. But Blanche Lincoln is about the classic. Because, I mean, she's the one, you know, I mean, the whole reason that everybody thought she was in trouble and she should have lost was because she you know, kind of skewered the public option. And that's why the union said that they'd go after her. So, you know, Barack Obama, buddy, what are you doing? You know, it's those same unions that, because they supported single-payer health care, put him in office. And then to have, you know, some stuff come, you know, to actually go after the unions.
I love the labor's response. Did you catch that one?
No. What did they have to say?
They said, we're not the arm of the Democratic Party. Just remember that.
See? Oh, man, I bet you won't hear that quote on Fox News.
Yeah.
Because that just spits in the face of their constructed reality.
Oh, and for those people who are wondering about the Helen Thomas thing, because people keep telling me that Matt Drudge is irrelevant, he's the one who kicked that into high gear, just so everyone knows.
Well, and, you know,
he's the one who placed it.
And you know, the thing that, because I sometimes am so kind of blind to actually remembering that, you know, like, people in America come from, you know, I the specific place that they might have come from. And I had totally, like, kind of forgotten, just out of just my brain not, you know, making the connection again. Helen Thomas, Lebanese-American.
Right.
You know, this might, you know, shouldn't that have some bearing on the view of her comments? You know, I mean, she comes from there. You know what I mean? It would be natural for someone to have that view of tell the Israelis to get out of Palestine. Because that's what she said.
Right.
Get out of Palestine. And then the follow-up question is where she got in trouble, where she said,
"Well, personally, my feeling on this, and it goes for the Democrats as well who do this. When you do gotcha videos like that, I don't think they should count for anything.
I agree,
especially if it's on a moment like it's on the street, and you say, and you just keep putting a microphone in someone's face. I'm not with that.
Nor am I. Especially someone that is that would be as accessible for a proper interview as someone like Helen Thomas would be. Now, if you got some corporate scumbag that is, you know, running away from litigation and running away from stuff like that, yeah, I don't mind when a reporter goes and runs them down. I really don't, because that's in the public interest. But, you know, this kind of... And do you think that when this all happened, she just said, you know what, I might not have much time left. So I'm going to disconnect myself from all people that I can impact as far as they can take my job. I reckon she's got enough money to live on. And I'm hoping that she's going to come out in a couple of months and start just writing on her blog. And actually, before she goes out, before that wonderful life ends up coming to an end, you know, whether it's 10 years from now or what, just hammer and actually tell it like she thinks it is and have her untethered. Sandra was kind of on about this the other night, and that maybe she was just like, you know what, I'm going to take this opportunity to step away from that and come back and just be myself for a while. Because she's a legend. She's a bloody legend, man. And the idea that little bit, when she was the hero in that press room during the Iraq war buildup and throughout everything, she's been the nemesis of every president for, you know, 60 years or something. It's just insane.
Can you imagine how many people are trying to be jockeying for that position to be that renegade journalist in the White House now? I wonder who's going to have the guts to do it.
Some CNN jerk sitting there going, give it to Fox News. Yeah, right.
If it is a Republican, that's going to be the worst.
How do you think now? I don't even know how does that position then get filled? Because I mean, she had one of the fixed seats, and you know, used to be first in line. It's the end of an era.
I think the agency is probably already scouting future stars, as you say, of the journalist world, who may have, you know what they're going to look for now? They're going to look for moderate brashness. That term, that term is just Orwellian to the core. But if you think about it, that's exactly where we're at, people. Moderate brashness. You can't be too brash now. This isn't 1970. This is 2010. Oh, no. And this is my favorite thing. They'll say, but this is a post 9/11 country. You can't be too brash now.
Last night, man. Remember last night how you said you saw where the BP spin machine was going to go about this being...
Right. With the natural disaster.
Fucking heard it everywhere, man. I've heard it everywhere since then.
I told you. Now listen. That's exactly what they do. You don't even notice it. Just like when you say BP, notice nobody's talking about Transocean. No one's talking about Halliburton. There's a reason for that.
But I mean, it wasn't but like an hour after I got off air, and I'm just like going, oh man. and I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, did he see something in a press release somewhere, and he's just pulling my... And I only laugh because it's...
Yeah, you don't want to cry. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't want to put my fist through the wall. I'll have to plug the hole. And I only have so many microphones left.
You want to Hulk smash something.
Oh, man, you know, I'm just watching this thing, and I even got talking to a mate of mine yesterday who's a libertarian, and, you know, I mentioned, you know, I've been covering Bob's show. It's been all BP in the Gulf all the time. He's like, well, good thing they're keeping the damn government out of the way. They'll fuck it all up. And I'm like,
you heard that marine biologist, we didn't talk about this, but you heard that marine biologist on Maddow, right, what she said specifically about the oxygen microliters?
I was talking about that yesterday where, I mean, it was microliters. I couldn't remember what the scale was, but yeah.
Right.
We're one.
And we're at critical mass. It's at three when it's at, I think the number was three. That's when they start stressing out.
We are at three,
and
when they start
stressing. It's a critical mass.
Yeah. And we're right on that. We're right on that tipping point. And so entire ecosystems will just be suffocated.
What do you think about this latest announcement of the the 72-hour watch. We're going to give you 72 hours.
72
what do you think
hours?
That's all about?
72 hours to what?
To get their house in order, I guess. That's pretty much what they were asking BP. I mean, they see the anger out there, and they need to say something, and they need to, you know, they need to have some kind of event, I guess. Some kind of media event that people can pay attention to, and that's their latest thing. With that, Allen says they had 72 hours.
This one slipped me by. I'm gonna have to check on this. I'm totally unaware of this.
It looks, you know, to me, it strikes me as one more excuse to pass time, to find another excuse.
Right.
And it's kind of deviously brilliant. You have 72 hours. Come up with something.
Well, it was just like BP. Oh, we'll know in 48 hours. And then 24 hours later, they said, we'll know in 48 hours. And then 24 hours later, we'll know in 48 hours. And then they stop doing that when they feel that the public's starting to go, wait a minute. And then they go and go, oh, now we're working on, you know, we're not going to drop the shopping center didn't work. So we're going to try a toupee. And we'll know in 48 hours. And, yeah, this is all stall. All of this is stall, divert, minimize, you know. And again, the stagecrafting of it, man. The idea that we describe the volcano in barrels instead of gallons, just because it makes a smaller number. And we describe the boom in linear feet. So you get millions.
Mm. Did you see that dumbass journalist jump into the oil? Did you read that story where he didn't even wear
any kind
of protection? He just wore a wetsuit.
I didn't. I didn't.
And he jumps right into the water, and then he reports on what it's like to remove the oil from his skin. And I thought, is this guy stupid? I mean, it's all in his hair. It's all covering his head. You have to read it, and then you got to read the comments, John. It's hilarious. the guy literally jumps in the water. He's surprised. Like, I can't believe that oil. And then he's talking about, and everyone around me was wearing hazmat suits, but I decided to jump in the water.
Oh, man.
Like, what?
You know, seriously, I saw that. I saw that when I was first got up and I was prepping for the show. And, you know, it's early here, and like at about 6:45 in the morning, I see the headline, and I'm just like going, I'm sorry, my brain can't handle stupidity of that high order.
Yeah.
This early in the morning. Just, you know.
My brain can't handle a natural disaster of this magnitude. BP is now a natural phenomenon, I guess.
Did you happen to see Colbert's thing on BP rebranding itself last night?
I heard about it, but no, I didn't see it.
It two nights in a row, Colbert's been on it. I mean, the night before when he had the mock bashing of the CEO of BP was great. But last night he talked about them changing their logo, and, you know, the first thing, you know, they show the BP flower thingy, you know, that sundial bullshit. And it suddenly, he goes, something that because supposedly that's pissing Americans off, you know, the green image thing. So thought they'd get it to something that, you know, more represented the public sentiment, and suddenly the flower turns into a BP-styled swastika. And at the end, he goes back to the regular logo, and he goes, it does kind of just look like a bright yellow and green sphincter.
Can I tell you the funniest thing this month, and it really has nothing to do with BP or anything. It's just it's funny because whoever got the I don't know if you know where I'm going, but there's a still of the tag team Whoomp where there it is, that video. whoever that guy is, he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize for real.
And for folks
that don't, that's just genius. Those people haven't seen it. It's a still of a dance club hip hop rap group tag teams video, and they show a picture of somebody that looks remarkably similar to our president.
Oh, yeah.
Barack Obama. And he's got a gold tooth, and he's on one of those old cell phones. You know, there's actually some speculation. You can't make this shit up. There's actually some speculation that it was actually Barack Obama.
Well, I mean,
could he have been in the video?
The guy looked close enough that, I mean, you know, if you were the person that just happened to watch that clip and all of a sudden went, wait a minute. You know, going back. No.
Yeah.
No. And then you, of course, in the world of the world, in the era of the World Wide Web, got to stick it up on the internet, man. Let everybody else see what they think. And I thought it was a great laugh. And Colbert did that too and took a picture of Obama and put the ball cap and the sunglasses on him side by side and looked bloody identical.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned it, because you were talking about that. So.
Oh, absolutely hysterical.
But anyways, John, I'm going to let you get to other callers. I just thought I'd give my 2 cents on the Alvin Green thing and a little bit of the BP, I guess, the media frame of the natural disaster.
Yeah.
They're going to keep using that too, John.
You know they are, and I wonder what kind of like lyrical doublespeak genius they'll come up with next. We can only just wait with bated breath. Always good, David.
Well, John, as always, it's been great talking to you, and you've done a great job so far of holding it down for Bob. And I look forward to your return. In whatever slot you choose to come back to.
Right on, man. Look forward to our little back to the audience kind of musical conversations. They're great fun. Thanks as always,
yeah,
David.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're amazing.
Right,
I appreciate
later,
it. Take it easy. All right, folks. That was David from Maine, as you know. Good mate of my show and great mate of this network. We're going to take a little bit of a break here. And I ran this actually to test the system this morning. And Agnes was like, oh, that's great. What's that? And I go, oh, we'll just have to play that. Bit of Marshall Tucker Band, Fire on the Mountain. It's a great track. You're listening to John Fox filling in for Bob Kincaid here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. And that's the listener-supported liberal voice. Stick around. We'll be back after this.
My family away from my Carolina home. Had dreams about to twist and started to roam. 6 long months on a dust-covered trail. They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell. And there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air. Holding them wheels and it's waiting for me. We were digging and sifting from 5 to 5, selling everything we found just to stay alive. Gold flowed free like the whiskey in the bar. Sinning was the big thing, Lord, and sin was the star. And there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them wheels and it's waiting for me. For the sake of fun,
or just a heathen knows that there are 44 songs and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills and it's waiting for me there. Now my widow, she weeps by my grave. Tears flow free for her man, she couldn't stay. Shot down in cold blood by a gun that carried fame. All for a useless and no good, worthless claim. And there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills and it's waiting for me there. Fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills and it's waiting for me there. Waiting for me there.
This is a public service announcement.
There's a new type of music program coming to the Horn.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never. But I don't need the
battle cry. Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Keep me down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch has gone. Kelly have to lose that on the list of dead. Those out and on.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
All right. Welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, your guest host for the next 2 hours. Let's light up them phone lines, folks. Look, it's the last chance I'm going to get to do this for a little while until I get my own show back on air. To get in on things, all the lines are... Oh, we got one caller hanging for a moment. And so line them up, 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. On your own nickel, 304-658-3333. And email rolls into John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com. And just before we go to the phones, during the break, checking the email. And Marty, Marty just says, John, please, please tell your wife not to waste her urine on Thatcher's grave. Sorry, I thought that was hysterical. If you're just tuning into the program and have no idea what that was about, check out the archive later. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Brother Luke! Brother Luke, how are you, man?
Oh, John, what's going on in the world? Anything good?
Oh, you know, it's just kind of so insane that I'm glad that there are folks ringing in. Otherwise, I'm not sure what I'd do tonight. What is it with Obama going after unions and all this other stupidity? And I mentioned you've got something of outrage to bring to the party.
Well, a couple different things. I just found it interesting that all this upset, they got so bent out of shape. Well, Helen Thomas has said, but I'm sitting there going, well, gee, isn't this Glenn Beck on an every night of the week? I mean, Lordy B. I mean, one of his shows, I mean, he's rewriting history every night as he goes.
Yeah, but when you are the example of what a White House reporter should be, you're a target, man.
And the other thing about that bugs me is, isn't it amazing how when Israeli does something, if any other country did that, we'd be hearing the word piracy.
See, mate, like...
Because they boarded legal craft and seized it.
In international waters. Well, and the whole defense thing, like, falls on its ass, man, when, you know, most of the victims were shot in the back of the head. Come on. Yeah.
But I mean, they're sitting there going, "Well, these people are fighting the Israeli people." It's like, "Gee, I'm sorry. If somebody was boarding my ship, I'd be fighting them off too."
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the idea. thing on the election last night.
Yeah.
I heard somebody talk about that. Isn't it gonna be fun watching Jerry Brown in California, whatever Fiorina or whatever it is, comes up there and says, "We need an outsider." All he does is hold up a picture of Arnold. He goes, "How'd that work for you?"
Oh,
you know, it's one of those things. It's gonna be fun watching Jerry get to run on. I'm a politician. We need a politician. You know,
man, that the paradigms are so screwed up at the moment. You know, that nothing makes sense. No label attaches itself to the right group of people, and reality seems to be slipping further and further away from more and more people. I like this thing in California, man, you know, Orly Tate. She's actually good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and seriously.
Democrats were really, some of the Democrats were really hoping for that. That would have been just so much fun.
Oh, well, I mean, oh. I said yesterday, let her win the Republican nomination. Let the GOP have her, man. And let the GOP candidates for governor and lieutenant governor have to go and appear with her. As she's sitting there going,
"That would have been it. Well, get out. Somebody shoot the tires out."
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, that's how they get around it, man. You just go and sabotage her motorcade every time, like going, "We don't know what happened, but she just couldn't make it."
what did you see the thing? I think it was over at Think Progress today, where some interview they were talking to Michael Steele, and he doesn't know who the GOP establishment is. You're the GOP chairman. If you don't know, who does? I mean, the GOP is running away from anything. I swear, I'm beginning to wonder if they're going to start shredding their
registration cards.
No, well, that too, but I mean, like their when you put in your application for a job, I can't think of the word. All of a sudden, I'm sorry.
Your resume.
You know, tell them what you've done.
Yeah,
your resume. Yeah. I bet they're shredding their resumes, going, "I've never been in politics." You know. You know. I mean, oh.
Have you caught McCain's great one?
No, I'm over him. I, you know, that's like, say, you know, About two months ago, he lost me. He was like, you know, I don't even bother listening to him anymore.
Only 2 months ago? But, you know, every
once in a while, when he went into the thing, I'm not a maverick routine.
Well, this is like just as good, Luke. Let me see if I can find this here. Oh, yeah. And actually, it's from Betsy's blog over at Relax Politics. Today's irony alert, McShane version. And it's, it's bad enough when Senator John McCain started criticizing others for changing their mind on immigration policy after he'd done the same thing. But for McCain to throw around accusations of being a Washington insider is perhaps even sillier. He actually called Hayworth a Washington insider and McCain's then an outsider after, what, 28 years in Congress?
I mean, I can see you accusing J.D. of being a loose nut. That's possible. Yes, indeed. That's pretty accurate.
Yeah. You could accuse him of a whole lot of things. But seriously, McCain is becoming like the textbook definition of someone who suffers projection now.
Well, he's almost developing, I guess, what will be the political Tourette's, you know. Like anything, if somebody says something before you even get the sentence out of your mouth, he's already saying the reverse.
Yeah, well, I'm seeing here, and I hadn't actually caught on to this one. Sparky's telling me in the chat room that the chicken lady lost in Nevada.
The other one he's got is the one he's going to face is the one that wants to get rid of Social Security and the EPA, and this one's just as good. You know what I mean? Either one of those women was just a blessing for Harry Reid.
And I find myself very surprised that I'm like kind of cheering for Harry Reid. But he's, you know, there are a couple of, I think, people that have surprised me. No matter how bad things seem to be with, you know, Obama attacking unions and whatnot, that one just gets me up the spine.
Uh-oh.
You know. This is the kind of day I'm having, man. There's so many things on top of my head. The thoughts come in and out, and I lose my own brain. It's also like 9 o'clock in the morning. my brain hasn't been awake as.
Well, roll back over. Yeah, go back.
Yeah. and it's cold down here this time of year, but. I'll switch tack. You know, I'm just seeing the weirdos are making ground, and I don't know if you heard that thing that Susan mentioned that California is now done away with the primaries.
Yes, I saw that. I was like, okay. You know, it's like saying anything California does never surprises me anymore. You know, I'm sorry. It's one of those things that. Somebody should just come in there and tell them, you know, this whole thing where they do their all these votes, you know, they have on different things. It's like, no, that ain't the way it works.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're a representative democracy, not a straight democracy. It don't work that way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's because, like, hey, if you throw everything like that up, you know, everybody want free ice cream? Yeah, we'll get that voted on. Yeah, you know.
Well, it's weird, too, because. So much about any change in the political system at the moment, I have to put through the filter of Citizens United. And mm-hmm. Now in California, if there isn't a party primary process to go through where there would at least be some sort of vetting, you know, at least for the public.
A firewall, essentially.
Yeah. A little bit of a firewall. So it's like, okay, here's some options, round them down. And then we'll take the best ones. You know, like, I like the idea of opening it up to more than just Democrats and Republicans. I think that that's a good thing. And because, you know, you'll have to deal with the Tea Partiers.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing, though, that I think you'll never get past nationwide. But it's beginning to get to this point with where you have primaries, where you have people crossing lines, Democrats and Republicans and Democrats. It's like you ought to be locked in. When you vote in your primary, that's what you are for your general. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
None of this switching back and forth where you go pick the weak cannon. Let's all go support him.
Yeah, like I'm registered in California for my absentee voting, And I tend to get usually around to just the federally impacted ones, you know, every 2 years. And, you know, there I would get sent ballots for both Republican and Democratic primaries. And I was really tempted to vote in the Republican one as well. And because I'm registered as an independent, so I can go for either. Right? And I guess that was a vehicle of allowing some third-party-ish influence. So, I mean, like, California has tried things along these lines. And in a just world, everyone voting in each primary could be a good concept. Because you'd probably be able to get people that would say, well, you know, if I was voting, if I would like to see the best, as far as the entire population is concerned, Republican candidate. And as far as the entire population is concerned, Democratic candidate. And, you know, maybe even say a Green candidate. Because if the Greens could take off somewhere, California would be one of those places. You know? But this whole thing of just kind of making it a free-for-all and with Citizens United, you could end up having, like I said to Susan before, you know, it's not going to be hard to go and find some flack to say, okay, go and lie your ass off and deceive for 8 years and you won't have to worry about a thing for you, your family, and all your relatives for the rest of your life.
There's a TV show, if you've ever seen it, called Leverage over on TNT.
Not seen that.
And one of the first shows they did, they had this one where they were talking to a guy who was the head of a corporation. And he's talking about how the fact, you know, a good $20,000 investment buys you a representative, and with a 95% turnover rate, that lasts you for years. You know?
Whoa.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the shameful part of it is it's true. You know?
It is. You know, going back, I don't know if you were tuned in yesterday, but Jim rang in late in the show, and, you know, he brought up, like, you know, he asked me what I thought of, you know, things like, you know, the Bilderberg Group and whatnot like that. And I said, you know, I kind of did my cringe at Alex Jones line, but then, you know, I said to him, but you don't need secret societies, man. They're doing it right in front of us. It's K Street. It's, you know, it's Wall Street.
Florida B. You know what I mean? We've got a whole section of the GOP that's still trying to put in a theocracy, you know. They're not even hiding it too much anymore.
No, and as long as, you know the secret handshake or whatever, you know, grand poobah, they'll defend you no matter what you do and claim all this, well, we're a church, you can't ask what happens in here. You know, I'm really tired of that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, it's the thing, we'll listen to the GOP try to sound moral and every time just look at them and go, let's ask Senator Vitter about this. Come on, bring it up. You know? You know, or ask Governor Stanford.
Oh, Stanford,
you know,
Mr.
Off the trail.
Yeah, Mr. Appalachian Trail. I love that one. That's still one of my favorites.
You know, they got two or three like that, you know, that it's like, guys, you know, quit trying to moralize. I love this one where somebody was talking about, you know, certain people and they were talking about Elliot Spitzer, you know, and he's come back out into the public life, and people were saying, oh, how can you listen to somebody like him? I just want to look at him and go, when's the last time you talked to Newt? You know?
Really? Really?
if we want to talk to somebody who should be kept off the air because of morality, there's a list on your side, bud.
Well, I mean, Sanford, you know, payoffs to you know, mistress's family members and all that kind of stuff. Hush money? I mean, come on. How you can even say...
Well, no, the one I still like is the one in Nevada, the one where his parents paid what was it, $90,000?
Yeah.
For the mistress. You know, and what I understand, that's still being investigated on some level. But you're just sitting there going, you know...
If there was any part of that whole tale that could seriously come back to bite that man in the ass, that's the one. That's the one.
But that's the one where he went around. He got too cute for his own good. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's just some of those things. You're just sitting there wondering. It's like they say, you know, I apologize for not getting it right. We were talking about the fact, they were talking about the lady that got the GOP nomination in South Carolina, Haley. I think maybe John Stewart or something, and he's sitting there talking about it. He said, and these are the people we look to when we start picking presidents. But this is the state that we look to to see who they pick. It's like, here you have Mark Sanford, you know, who still to this day the state legislature can't think about bringing any charges up against, you know, and in his lieutenant governor is nuttier than that, you know. He's the one that was the one that he could tell people who were illegals by how they look. Or how their shoes. That was him.
And I tell you, idiot of the day, as far as I'm concerned, is this Texas Congressman John Culberson.
Oh.
His whole line of going, the Gulf spill, if looked properly in historical context, is a statistical anomaly.
Well, I'd say, okay, come on, we're going to go out and go take a little swim. Now, I'm going to put on the hazmat suit. You're going to go out in your Speedos. We're going to go out a half mile and come back. Let's have some fun.
It's just crazy, Luke, you know, and I just think, you know, I talk to all you folks, and there's so much reason and kind of thought into things, and I just watch what actually comes out of the rest of the American. I'm going, it's a mess. The whole thing's an absolute mess.
I know. Yes. There's sometimes you just wish Atlantis would rise up and we'll all just move there. If it goes back down, so what, you know?
And this is where...
There has to be an improvement over this.
Yeah, and this is where I feel really bad for the really ignorant, you know. The Beck audience, you know, people who would be religiously watching that guy, if they were actually better served by him, if he actually tried to do things factual... He could still do the same.
You know,
he could do the same kind of show, and have some credibility if he wasn't just going down the nut job routine. There's a whole lot of scary shit going on that he could get people scared about. That would be legitimate.
You know what I mean? It's one of those things you wish. You know, one of Bob's favorite films is Thing of Facing the Crowd with Andy Griffith. You know, where it's the guy who's fooled everybody, and then somebody one time turns the microphone on when he doesn't want them to. Only problem is Beck does it every night and just sort of looks at him and goes, so? You know. He sits there and tells them the crazy things, and they just kind of look at him and go, okay.
Yeah, it was like, you know, the famous Cheney, so what?
Yeah.
You know, the American people,
I mean, you know, what? Well, you know, it's like the whole thing of BP, you know, and this whole BP thing that, you know, keeps getting swept under the rug is the history that this little country company you ever heard of called Halliburton. And this history they've had, you know, that this wasn't the first time right after they got done, an oil well blown up. You know, where they come in and poured the concrete or whatever it was, and like 24 hours later, the oil well's blown up. That's happened a couple of times with them. But amazingly enough, no one seems to be looking into them or to this Transocean. I mean, not that they don't need to be looking right at BP, but it's like, say, we need to look at all the other cast of characters.
Well, yeah, and especially after that circular shit-eating grin firing squad that they had in front of the Congressional Subcommittee, the CEOs of all three companies sitting there going,
I hope they've learned is like, guys, next time we come up, you each speak one at a time, and we keep the others in the isolation chamber.
Yeah, yeah. You know, everybody lived in their own little cone of silence, and said, you know, it must have been the other two guys, and you know, this is like the ultimate extent of plausible deniability, when you really can get onto this with Halliburton, the actual explosion.
Well, most of us still know that Halliburton, Halliburton ought to be in jail just for some showers in Iraq.
Right, right. And Liz Cheney has the audacity to be on ABC TV and say that Halliburton never defrauded the government, and that's just a liberal talking point.
Oh, well, you know how it is. It's like, they just remember, These are the same people that I'm sure arranged, you know, gave W the plastic turkey when he went over on the turkey run for Thanksgiving that time, or Christmas.
Yeah.
Remember when he went over there for his surprise visit and had him out there walking the, as I call it, the plastic turkey.
Yeah, the plastic
he's
turkey.
He's carrying a turkey that looks like it's 20 pounds, and he ain't look like he's lifting an ounce. You know what I mean? So that to me, that's one of those Japanese-styled fake food, you know, or it looks real pretty until you go over and touch it. You go, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Brother Luke, I got Sandra waiting on the
line.
I
got more people, bud. You have a good...
Hey, man, great to talk to you, buddy. It's been a very long time. Take care.
Bye.
All right. And that was our good friend, Brother Luke. And moving on to the one, the only Sandra. Hey, Sandra, how are you?
Hey. You said that your phones were light, so I thought I'd call in again.
Ah, that's all right. Love talking to you. You're a challenge for me.
I was just tripping on, you know, it's like all is just being revealed in this election. I mean, the sort of, you know, we see that the Democrats are quite happy to throw unions under the bus. Nice comments by Clinton and nice comments by Gibbs.
What did Clinton
say? I mean, it's really
what did Clinton
quite
say?
Disgusting.
What did Clinton say? And was this Hillary or Bill?
No, he said that the unions are trying to manipulate you to get your vote. I forget the exact quote.
Why is it when a corporation runs a campaign, that's freedom of speech, but when a union represents, say, its workers, which is part of the population of the public, that's manipulation?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's just so bizarre. I mean, this whole vilification of union and unionization is just so entrenched in this country to the point where people who, they don't really understand that wages are set by unions. Even if you're not in one,
right?
There's unions around, the wages are usually at least stable. You know, they go up. I mean, it's incredible. And this country is, the unions are so weak as is, right?
It's horrible. It's horrible. I mean, it's interesting. The unions were dismantled in the United States, the UK, and Australia all at the same time, right? The Warfies thing here in Australia, and, you know, basically the Reaganomics thing of free markets and bashing the unions. And they're all, the unions in all these countries have been weakened to the point of almost being almost impotent. But some are getting to flex their muscles more and more because people, even unemployed people, are starting to see the use of being part of a union, having someone to be a voice for you.
Yeah, and also, you know, even, you know, some members of the elite, you know, they see the value of having unions as sort of a counterbalance. Because if you have a society that's sort of neo-feudalistic, you know, the rich can only hide out. I mean, it's just not a very nice setup.
No.
Unfortunately, I think that's what's kind of happening here because the way it's looking, the Democratic Party seems quite happy to, I mean, we touched on this yesterday, to cut the working class loose. That's what it looks like is going on to me.
I think so too. And what else do you have if you don't have a working class? You know, it's one of the things that I still like about that I love that Australia still maintains that idea that to be a tradesperson, to be someone who actually has to shower after they get home from work is an honorable thing. And we haven't had the service economy completely marginalize that in this country yet. But the United States, ever since the 80s, everybody thinks that they should be able to be in a clean white shirt and always shower before work.
And there is a real difference in the world of the people that shower before work and the people that shower after work.
Well, I mean, you didn't. There's no way you can build a sophisticated industrial society without industry, you know. And then America was sold a bill of goods with this sort of knowledge-based economic mumbo jumbo. Because if you're not able to make goods to sell, yeah, it reduces it. Plus, you have 300 million people, and not everyone can be in the coordinating classes. That's what I call them.
I like that.
And, you know, and it's just, unfortunately, though, I think because of the inequality in this country, I mean, it's so severe, as you know. I mean, it's really so severe. I can't believe how much wealth and power such a small few have now. It's a plutocracy, I think.
Well,
did you hear that?
Go ahead.
Did you hear that? See that story where the estate tax lapsed, and so this billionaire that died, all his family are just going to receive the money. There's no estate tax, and it doesn't kick back in until I guess the beginning of next year or something crazy. That was another gift from the Bush administration.
Watch a whole bunch.
And it's stunning. The tax policy in this country, it cannot sustain democracy. Yeah.
It can't sustain a society. I mean, you know, California is a great microcosm example for, you know, where the United States is going. Regardless of government, they constantly cut taxes to the point where they can't even pay to keep the lights on, you know, and just constantly saying, you know, we shouldn't have to pay for it, but we want it. We still want roads, and we still need, you know, electrical infrastructure. You still need all these things, but no one ever wanted to pay for it. And
now you have these. Go ahead.
Just saying, you know, it's just this blind reality that you think that you can have things, denying that you need them and never pay for them, but use them anyway. The hypocrisy just kills me.
Oh, it's incredible here in California because now we're dealing with these sociopathic CEO people running for higher office just because they're rich. I mean, someone needs to tell these people that a corporation is a dictatorship. If you want to run in government, you need to know where the bodies are buried, how to deal with such a variety of people. Government isn't, you know, they always say they want to make government run like a business. It's just a load.
Yeah, that was.
Government isn't there to run as a business. I'm so sick of it.
That was.
I mean, this country is so warped. I don't, you know.
That was, I remember.
So now we have this.
Sorry.
Oh.
I was going to say, that's what I remember was the shtick when I was growing up. Was,
yeah.
You know, that just complete, you know, I remember even my stepfather sitting there going, the Democrats couldn't run a business. And it's like, I'm not asking, you know, and see, then I was still drinking the Kool-Aid, being, you know, young and uneducated by the rest of the world, and went, oh, yeah, okay, you know, of course they can't balance a budget, but it's a false, again, the false dichotomy. And that was rammed down our throats as teenagers, you know, and we walk out going, oh, wow, really? That didn't add up.
Well, this is you. How many years did you have that John Howard there? As
11 years.
Well, because, you know, I remember that he was, like, in state government in New South Wales when I was there. I was like, oh, God, he's such an idiot. So when he became prime minister, I was like, oh, no. you know, it was like sort of a bad throwback to when I was living in Australia. Cause he's been in politics forever, that guy.
Oh, yeah. And he's a very, very clever player. He lost.
Sure.
He lost his first go for the prime ministership. And then they went through a few leaders for a while, and then he finally got him in 96, I believe it was. And
well, you had that oily Keating. He used to really bug me too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Keating. But see, Keating's funny, man. In Keating's, as he's aging, he's becoming kind of a great vocal sounding board, and he pops up once in a while.
Well, no, he was really clever. I always thought he was well put together, and you know what I mean. But he was just something a little bit medallion about that guy.
You should actually, since you know about him. There was a musical written about his life about 2 years ago, and it became a massive Australian hit. And Keating's got such an ego that he went like 20 times to see the show.
You know what? I'm not surprised. I just remember he was sort of bigger than life, kind of everywhere. And we're talking like over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember him really clearly. I thought, oh, who's this chap?
Well, he's,
but anyway.
He's actually really the one that's very much responsible for making probably the most important move for the Australian economy to stabilize it after the 1970s. He was the one that up until a certain stage, Australia was still tied directly to the pound. The currency here.
Oh, okay.
Right? And so that was one of the problems that they were facing. They didn't have the in the way currencies are traded and whatnot back and forth. It can be very detrimental to have a fixed currency. And so he actually went and floated the currency against the open market and brought us to the dollar system. But that ended up creating, and he said it's going to hurt at first. Because there's going to be all this correction that's got to happen as we enter the market. We're going to be new. But ever since then, the Australian dollar has been really stable, for the most part, very robust. And it's kept stability here because we're not tied to somebody else. And he is actually, Howard did, and then Howard comes in. Howard, in the beginning, he was a pretty good prime minister. I came in 2 years, he was 2 years into his first term, and he had actually done the gun ban after the horrible massacre that happened here. The country was so outraged, that's when they outlawed handguns.
Yeah, okay.
And this is a right-wing guy, but he was humane enough to see this was a horror. The people never want to see this again. We don't want to become America, was actually what they were saying at the time. And he...
Yeah, I thought it was...
So,
well, I thought it was interesting how Australians, were quite happy to sort of disarm. I was surprised, because when I lived there, it was yahoo, I have to tell you. I'm like, yikes.
That was the post-World War II generation that actually had been, bombed by the Japanese...
Yeah, they seem to like their guns. I was like, where am I, America?
Yeah.
I was in New Zealand, and that was like, sort of like puff and whatever. And I came to Australia, I'm like, damn, it's like the Wild Wild West out here.
we have a little bit of a gun party here, but they never really get up much, because all you have to do is bring up the massacre, and everybody goes, no. We saw how the numbers actually work. And we have, and they also saw, I think they also saw the thing that every illegal gun starts its life as a legal one.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And that is a fact. That is an absolute fact. So, again, I sometimes think there's a maturity level. And I really look at sometimes the way the United States looks at things like gun control and some other things as so unbelievably juvenile.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, there's a lot of puerile sort of attitudes in this country, which I think is a function of a hegemony sort of superpower.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much that, Americans don't have to deal with, i.e., they don't appreciate having the world's reserve currency. I think if you talk to almost anyone, I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about, but it's major.
Yeah,
and
the fact that it's also the oil trading currency. See, there's
all the sort of, a lot of trade is settled in dollars, sure.
Yeah. a lot of companies, you know, like in Asia, they base all their pricing internationally on U.S. dollar, which is, you know, I mean, but where the reserve oil currency, that's where it really gets ugly in our politics, because still, the final catalyst for us actually going into Iraq was the fact that Saddam was going to start trading his oil in euros. Because as soon as Saddam did that, and Russia followed suit, and one other nation, the cash float that keeps America alive would evaporate in a second.
Well, this is what's going on with Iran. You know that it's like another oil producing country dallying with dropping the dollar, and all of a sudden we're, you know, threatening them under the pretense of some BS.
Ah, that's
nuclear weapons, my ass. I mean, come on now. Israel has hundreds of them. I don't hear anybody blubbering about that.
And we never actually talk about the fact that Iran, their supplies have actually been hit so hard that they can't produce enough oil to even run their own electrical grid. Power is very, very sketchy over there. And this is actually why they do have a legitimate case to be working on a domestic nuclear program, no matter how much myself as a green person hate the idea of it. But you're in a country here, they can't put solar panels up, not in a place like that. They'll just get destroyed in a week. So, you know,
strategically, look where that country is situated and what people are around them. They're surrounded by enemies. And the U.S. has invaded the country right next to it. Israel is right next to it. Afghanistan, they hate, is right above. I mean, I'm not advocating for nuclear proliferation because it's bad, but it's just stunning. It really is.
Well, yeah, because, you know, we have, you know, politicians in this country pushing for the same thing, more nuclear power, and it's an okay debate to have here, and that we're legally allowed to do such things to power our economy. If we have that right, why does a sovereign nation, another sovereign nation, even though it's one that we have problems with, who hasn't really done much of anything in a long time, you know, as, because it always just seems like, you know, they always show I'm a dinner jacket after the Israelis, you know, make some claim, you know, and again, I just get so frustrated, you know, when I see Helen Thomas. The more time goes by, the more that event makes me angry, Sandra.
Oh no, that's just terrible. No, I think that was a bit of an outrage, and like we said yesterday, I mean, the whole notion of them criticizing her so quickly and so harshly when Israel just killed up a bunch of people, it's just disgusting. And she made that statement, back in May, too. I think that's interesting.
Oh, right. Someone was just holding on to it.
Yeah.
So that when nerves were frayed.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
Right, it's also orchestrated, and you know, but it's some interesting dynamics going on because Dianne Feinstein, of all people, you know, has sort of broken rank with the lockstepness of it all, and has like delicately suggested that maybe there should be an inquiry.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think Israel is, I don't want to say they're on their last gasp, but you know, I do think we'll be in a different place 5 years from now with them, because they can't go on. This can't go on. This is an outrage.
Yeah, it's completely unsustainable, this situation. I mean, when it's so obvious, you know, the flotilla thing, you know, I mean, it's just so unbelievably obvious, and the spin game. I mean, it was absolutely, you know, not even trying to hide it. You know,
it was over the top.
Oh, and it's always over the top. It's always over the top. Go ahead.
Oh, no, just some of the sort of narrative, you know, the right to defend themselves. They, you know, it's just the same. It's just, and it's so hollow now. It's like, what do you need to defend against? Like I said, escape from New York, open air prison by the sea. What else do they need to do?
Yeah.
You know? It's terrible.
Yeah, I saw a good friend of mine, Anthony Lowenstein, in Google chat a couple of days ago, and he's a writer here in Australia. I used to run his blog for a while, and he is looking at it in reality, young Australian Jew, and he writes very, very beautifully about the Palestinians have a right to life. And I've watched this guy have hundreds of thousands of dollars spent by the local Israel lobby to destroy him in the press over and over. When I ran his blog, it was horrible. And I just popped him up in chat. I don't get to talk to him that much anymore, but I just said, I imagine things are pretty busy in your world. And he just kind of comes back. He says, oh, what? Documenting the fall of civilization in the Middle East? And for him to even say, you know, that tongue-in-cheek, because he's used to dealing with it just being this constant, you know, same, biased argument. And get, my missus was on a thread at The Guardian last night, a piece written by some, you know, Israeli apologist-type person, you know, in this situation. Like, in this situation, you have to take the situation, you know, as an event on its own. And you don't even need context. International waters, you cannot be fighting, you know, people in self-defense when they're shot in the back of the head. This is...
And it's crazy. And also, if you're going to try to establish viable international institutions, you cannot let Israel just destroy regimes and norms that have been created since World War II. I mean, it's an outrage. Every time I look at that situation, and Israel, I just think, you know, they are like a lunatic state, just like Norman Finkelstein said.
Yep.
He called them a lunatic state. I was like, damn, he don't be messing around.
like I say, as far as I'm concerned, they've crossed the line where they're actually believing their own bullshit.
Oh, listen, anyway, I'll let you go, but did you happen to hear... I know this is a bit out of the way, but there was somebody who sent an email to Mike Malloy, which was out of this world, because they used the chocolate rations will increase from 35% to 25%, and they were talking about the BP spill, how they're saying they've captured 10,000, and wasn't it 5,000 that was coming out? I mean, it was just a brilliant email, and it's so Orwellian. I just thought it was perfect because we're not getting the real story here. I mean, how much oil is actually coming out, John?
Everyone's estimations are probably way under the mark. And, I mean, I've heard things as high as 100,000 gallons a day.
Well,
or 100,000 barrels.
Seabed.
Yeah, and now the seabed appears that it might be just kind of seeping. So, you know...
I mean, I thought that people were crazy talking about an extinct event, you know, extinction event.
Well, that's the... David and I were talking about this, and if you go and check out Rachel Maddow's show, I believe from Monday, she has this ocean biologist on who, you know, was out on a research vessel 3/4 mile from the event, you know, underground zero. And she basically described what's going on. And she explained how they tested it by dropping sensors down a water column. And one of the things that they do oxygen saturation tests, right? It came down to a thing where at, I think it was 0.03 of a liter of oxygen per liter of water is the point where
oxygen breathing, you know, water life begins to stress, and at 0.02 is when it all dies. We're just kicking down in a lot of areas to 0.03. So already we're setting up a thing where, because one of the things that happens as the microorganisms that can actually process some of this oil naturally, when they process it, they remove oxygen from the water as a process, which they wouldn't do when they're eating other things. And they're basically starving the entire area of that ocean of oxygen. And we could be looking at the entire Gulf could just kind of die in a hit. And that's not an extreme circumstance.
It's just, I mean, the whole thing is just so mind-boggling. But what I don't, what I do find scary is these corporations and the in collusion with the government, which is like fascism, is working against our knowing what's going on. I just want to know. And that seems to be at a premium. Not, you know, you can't get to, you won't be able to know. So, you know, I'm done with Obama. You know, I'm through. Fuck him. And I'm just a bit terrified because I don't know what is going to solve this particular problem.
I'm so unbelievably disappointed, and I had, you know, in some ways very modest expectations, but I sure as heck expected a lot better than what we're getting. And I do actually believe that when it comes to what the government had at its disposal, Obama sent out there. But I think the big problem is that we've completely denied and underestimated the capability of the damage done as we put more and more research into getting the oil, but nothing into what to do if it goes wrong. And that hubris is coming
back. See, that in itself is ridiculous, and that's where a government should come in. Forget about the free market. That's fine. But when you're talking about extractive industries, you should have a contingency plan. It's just common sense. If your dumbass is going to drill and punch a hole into the center of the world, you need to have a contingency plan. The fact that they didn't, and then the reason why I'm so done with Obama is because he said, well, I guess I relied too much on the idea that the oil companies had the expertise. And I just thought, did you catch that? But he said it was just...
Well,
totally demoralizing. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Well, like I said, this goes back to the thing where, you know, because we haven't had the regulatory systems in place that we should have, and those that we have are being completely undermined or ignored, nobody's prepared for this. Nobody. Everyone's just sitting there kind of, you know, throwing shit at the wall, hoping that something's going to stick, something's going to do something, as the only thing that they can do that will have any success is dropping those relief wells, and let's hope we
That's not guaranteed, because I read an article where they had this sort of thing happen. I don't know, it took 10 months for them to actually hit the mark. You see what I'm saying? And this was only 500 feet down. This is 5,000, John.
Yep, I know. So again, like David was talking, about earlier, you know, just another stalling tactic, Like, you know, that every 24 hours, it was going to be another 48 hours. You know, and it's all because they know they can't stop this. They know that the only chance that we've got is getting some relief wells down there, and if they hit them, then they can start working on equalizing the pressure. And this all just fits the idea that they can still get the oil out of the well and sell it. They're still only driven by profit.
Oh, no. It's incredible. And the whole idea that they, that it's just sort of pushing it down the road, August, and I've heard reports of Christmas. Every time you listen to a scientist who's not on somebody's payroll, they're talking years, Christmas, you know, some real scary stuff. So I'm listening to the scientists, you see what I'm saying? Because they don't have a dog in a fight. They're just giving out information, you know?
Absolutely right. And this again is why should we be listening to BP? They have.
No, they shouldn't.
That they should be put, brought into receivership, and that's the end of it. It's the end of it.
No, I can believe that.
Go ahead.
I can believe that that horrible Tony Hayward was saying, oh, well, you can get shrimp from other places. Did you catch that quote?
The guy is so disconnected. It's like, you know, it's all. See, he only thinks about the, like, the business end of it. Oh, well, you know, you want shrimp. You get some prawns from Indonesia, right? That are being.
Oh, I was like, I thought, oh dear God, is he for real? You know, shoot him.
Here's a guy who's never had to work for a penny in his life. You know, never a thought for the fact that it's not about being able to buy the shrimp. It's about the people that go and catch and supply the shrimp. You moron.
Oh, no. Anytime these people like Blankenstein and Jamie Dimon and all these sort of lords of the world make a public appearance or come out down from Mount Olympus, it's always really disturbing. It's like, yikes, you people are really scary. Please go away. You see what I mean? I'm appalled by the sociopaths in charge of these corporations because they all seem to be kind of the same, really frightening people.
Great, great, great word to remind people of, sociopath.
Oh, boy. Okay, listen, have a good evening.
You too. Thanks, Sandra. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
All right, and that was Sandra. We're going to take our top of the hour break a little bit on the late side here, and when we come back, I've got Cossack on hold. Just hang out there for a minute, Cossack. I need to go wet me whistle. So you're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid, but today with John Fox. We've got another hour to go. Light the phone lines up. Just let's make this free form and just have some fun before I have to give Bob the keys back. So with that, not that one. There we go. A little bit of Faith No More. Evidence. This one's for Mr. Hayward.
Thank you.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is a public service announcement.
There's a new type of music program coming to the Horn.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never.
But I don't need the battle cry.
Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Take me down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch has gone. And Kelly half the lose that on the list. And then goes out and on.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Head On.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the last and final hour of Head On with Bob Kincaid. I'm John Fox, filling in for the one, the only, the master, who will be back tomorrow night. Can't wait. But thanks, everybody, for making me feel so welcome in, you know, filling some pretty big shoes, eh? And I got to thank Agnes, too, for being great. Just being great. It's been really fun doing this again, darling. Without further ado, I do believe we should go straight back to the phones. And I do believe we have our good friend, Mr. Cossack, on the line. How you going, Cossack?
Hey, John, not too bad. Yourself?
Oh, you know, I think I'm I think I'm going to make it.
let me ask you something. What are the international borders of Israel?
What, as in who borders upon them?
Never. I mean, what are Israel's internationally recognized borders?
Oh, 1967.
Well, they don't acknowledge that. No.
No.
It's I mean, the way they see it, if their deed, quote unquote, is in the Bible, then to them goes everything from the Nile to the Euphrates, right?
Yeah.
They haven't expressed at any point what their international borders are. Nobody knows what the international borders claimed by Israel truly are.
Well, they appear to be whatever they decide that they are. And, you know, there was a piece, I'm not sure if it was a piece in The Guardian, I think it was a piece in The Guardian yesterday, where someone has been portraying this the way my missus does, that, you know, Israel's not so much a country, but a colony. And, you know,
exactly.
And you look at the way that they are trying to marginalize and make disappear the Palestinian people. And you can only, when you blockade medicine and all of that, and, you know, bomb infrastructure and all of that, you know, I'm sorry, this whole, you can't look at it and think that this is, you know, anything but trying to take over someone else's land. It's shocking.
Yeah. And kind of like us.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, and, you know, Gail and I were talking about this, and this is, Luke, you're dragging me towards that third rail. You know, where I asked the question with the hindsight of history, kind of, or not kind of, I do, in every other major conflict throughout modern history, displaced people were taken in by nations of the world, those that felt that they couldn't stay.
Right.
And like in this Guardian thread, there was a commenter that said he and his wife were German Jews, and after the war was over, they went back home because that was their home and had been for centuries. So, you know, it's not the fact that it was, you know, the Jewish people that were, you know, there aren't words to describe what happened, you know, under Hitler. There just aren't words to describe it. But it doesn't matter who it is. If you go and you carve out a piece of someone else's land and say, here, you're asking for a problem.
Well, it's like, for example, when the original UN plan of separation was to give 53% of Mandate Palestine to the Jews, and the other 43% went to the Palestinians, even though there were a hell of a lot more Palestinians. And that wasn't good enough for them, so they took over the rest of Israel. In 67, they refused to go back to their 67 borders. Yeah, why should we do that? And, you know, think about it. The Israelis get highly annoyed if anybody tries to make a comparison between, say, Gaza and the Warsaw Ghetto. But how is what they are doing to the Gazans any different than what the Nazis did to them?
I don't, you know, you talk about this thing like if you disagree with anything that Israel does, you're accused of having an anti-Israel bias. But the people that constantly write that, oh, all of this is, you know, our right, this, that, the other thing, well, you have a pro-Israel bias. So why, because I disagree with you, I'm labeled one way, but you, with your views that you have, can't be labeled as being just as biased.
Exactly. It's like, for example, we constantly are faced with 6 million Jews, never again, 6 million Jews, never again. Okay, how many Russians died? How about 30 million? You think that put a little bit of a dent in their population there? You think? Maybe?
Just a little.
But
yeah, they allowed over a million prisoners of war to starve to death because we Russians were also Untermensch. It wasn't just the Jews. I'm sorry. There were a lot of other people that weren't human either and were treated that way.
Yeah, what about just gays?
Exactly. Gays, intellectuals, right down the line. It's like the infamous Judy Miller wrote a book years ago called One by One by One and how horrible it is that all the Europeans have forgotten about the poor Jews. Why the Russians don't even have a word for Holocaust. They don't.
Really?
I didn't know that. And secondly, do you think they may have had a little bit more on their plate to worry about?
And
like I said, 30 million.
And
that's a hell of a lot of people.
And Cossack, do you sometimes get the impression that, you know, in these situations, no one ever expects to see that certain people will view history through the lens of their own experience, and that might not be the American lens. And, you know,
it
all seems just very right that if at the same time the Russians lost 30 million people, they might have a slight, say, heavy coverage of that part of the history. I think I could pretty much guarantee that. You know, in the same way that if you go to school in San Antonio, Texas, it's all Alamo all the time.
Correct. Well, it's like, for example, in Russia, it's referred to as the Great National Patriotic War. It's not the Second World War. And because it was, for the Russians, it was a battle for survival.
Right.
This was not a... You know, the Germans weren't taking prisoners. they had a tendency of killing everybody. They weren't real high on taking Russian prisoners. If they did, oh well, they starved or died from lack of medical care and what have you. They weren't real heavy on. I mean, and the Russians weren't much better. You know, of the army that was captured in Stalingrad, only about 10% ever made it back. But do you blame them?
Well,
if you look to see what happened in Stalingrad, you can understand why they weren't real keen on treating them very nicely.
It's amazing how we're expected, how we expect other people. You know, this happens all the time. You know, it seems, you know, if you stray from the doctrine, you'll find hard times, to quote Michael Ferranti, you know, and this happens, you know, you saying this, you know, concept, you know, the Russians don't even have a word for Holocaust. I mean, that just sounds like lunacy to me. First of all, I think that they'd either use, you know, some form of the word that we use, or some, there's got to be a Russian translation. Now, they may not, as you said, call it the Holocaust or the Second World War. For them, it was a different war because of their situation in it. And, you know, that whole history is written by the victors kind of thing, I think, plays into this, too. You know, it's just like, what do you mean you're not naming it that, even though it was the same event? And if you look, you know, I would think that would be a great way to go and study their angle of history, saying, oh, they call it this for, why would they call it that? Maybe I should go learn something.
Well, it's like, for example, you've heard of the book "The Holocaust Industry" by Norman Finkelstein, right?
Yes, not read it, but I've heard of it.
And you notice about how Jews worldwide keep on waving the bloody shirt of World War II and, you know, see how horrible this is. And yet they refuse to see that their own behavior, as demonstrated with the Palestinians, is no more nor no less horrendous than the behavior that was used against the Jews. And it wasn't even the Palestinians that were doing it.
I want to pose a question to you, Cossack.
This is
an opinion of my missus, and I have to say I buy into this. If you are pro-Israel, you can't be left. You can't actually call yourself progressive or left.
Oh, I agree.
It's a hard statement, for some people to swallow. But really, if you are backing the occupation and slow death of an occupied people, and, you know, there's a radio host whose name shall not be mentioned, that we used to get into this all the time, where I told him I don't actually believe he's on the left of anything, because he's backing a fascist colony.
Exactly. I mean, there actually is a strain of thought in Israel that says, well, look, we're doing nothing more nor nothing less than what the European colonists did when they came off boat here.
Absolutely.
That's a horrible excuse.
In
my mind, that's a horrible excuse.
It's like, well, we did it before. You let us do it the last time. Why not now? Maybe because we've advanced since then. But unfortunately, it seems that there's a whole lot of people that haven't. Yesterday I mentioned that whole thing from I believe it was the Counterpunch piece describing, you know, the way the United States has gotten, like you said, that double standard, that, you know, there could be a meeting with Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Netanyahu. Netanyahu could stand up, shoot Hillary Clinton in the head, have his bodyguards assassinate the rest of the entire staff, and there would be a two-inch piece in the back of the paper somewhere saying, due to a disagreement with Israel, the president has had to nominate a new Secretary of State.
Exactly. I mean, that's how blind people are. And trust me, having been on that end of the stick, I can understand. International Jewry has a big chip on the shoulder and has a right to have it there.
Yeah.
I mean, what was done to them in a systematic manner during World War II, there's no excuse. There's no way of mitigating what was done. It was beyond horrible. It was beyond brainless. But that was the same solution that was being used on others. For example, the Nazis couldn't believe that Americans actually had, oh my God, black fighting men who were beating the crap out of the Aryan supermen. They never came to grips with that, you know, because it destroyed their entire worldview of themselves as superior.
You know, you kind of make me think of a couple of things. One, when I was living in Germany, I found a really, really I discovered a very, very interesting thing. If there has been a nation that you can point to that is very conscious of its past and is very aware of the horrors that happened under their flag. And to the point where people of my generation, Germans, it's really hard to get them to talk about any of it because they feel so unbelievably sick about it. And to on top of that, they haven't forgotten about things like freedom of speech. Because, as many people know, I made a living as a busker when I lived in Germany, playing on the street. And every couple of months, the local police, which we called Greenpeace, because they were in their green uniforms, would come up and say, "Hey, guys, there is a neo-Nazi political event happening here tomorrow. Please don't come. Not that we don't want you here. It's just we don't want there to be any possible situation where you folks get hurt." And they still knew that they couldn't shut down the rabble who still holds some extreme views. But when they show up, very often everybody else disappears and lets them be in their own little echo chamber. But they found what I think is a really happy medium between understanding what happened and not overreacting on people's rights and finding a way to actually have, you know, some sort of healing. And the other interesting thing that I found was, and a friend of mine who had been living there for years as a translator said, you got to, you know, Germany, as we know, you know, Germany, the place has, you know, goes back for centuries. However, he said, the German identity is like an infant, because over the last couple of hundred years, their system has been thrown into upheaval like every 40, 50 years. And every time they'd start to get a national identity, the entire identity would be thrown into a blender, and then a new one would come up. And so even though they're a very old people, they're a very young country as far as identity. And I saw that manifest itself. It was just, you know, it was one of those things when someone tells you something and that light bulb goes off and you start to kind of see the way people interact in certain situations and you just go, wow, man, this really hit these people deep. I will never have any doubts about the general population having made if not a turnaround, have the good people shine through. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Israel, who was the abused, have now become the abuser. And that's the horrible opposite side of the coin.
And it wasn't even Israel, because Israel didn't exist, obviously. But, you know, the thing that always killed me is, first and foremost, why in God's name did you choose to colonize an already settled piece of land, which the vast majority of Jews that emigrated to Israel were Central and Eastern European Jews? What the hell do they know from a desert? They are Europeans. If anything, what they should have done is carve a chunk of Germany out and say, here, this is the new Jewish homeland, and the UN is going to protect you.
Hey, Koss,
No,
go finish your point. Finish your point, sorry.
Here's the new Jewish homeland. The UN, the newly established UN, is going to protect you. And this is what happens to Germany when you do idiotic things like this. It's going to cost you.
Now, Sigel and I have been talking about this a lot recently, and, you know, when Israel was founded, does my memory of history serve me right that there were three possible locations discussed? One in South America, like maybe a part of Argentina, and then there was a spot in Africa somewhere. Am I anywhere near the ballpark on that?
Yeah. And also, actually Hitler had planned to resettle all the Jews to good God. Blank.
I hate that when it happens.
What's the large island off the eastern shore of Africa?
Oh, is that the Azores?
No, that's the other side.
Oh, my brother-in-law was stationed there with the B-52s before the okay. First Gulf War. I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was the original plan that Hitler had. He didn't really want to kill them all. He just wanted to get them all the hell out of Germany and ethnically cleanse them. I'm not saying this is any better. Madagascar, that's it.
Oh.
Madagascar.
Okay. I had a different one in my head, but now the thing that I was trying to that I should have actually gone and actually looked up, but the Argentinian location, that would have been actually part of the Commonwealth at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if I'm not mistaken,
yeah,
the African location was part of the Commonwealth. I would have thought,
mm-hmm,
if you're going to do this cut up, and as the English kind of drove this thing and the Americans through the UN, or what became the UN, wouldn't it have been, if you're going to do it, cut off a piece of your own land instead of going to a third party? You know, you follow what I mean? Like,
right.
like a lot of this could have been, even though it was already in an occupied territory of the Commonwealth, use some of your own instead of, again, like, and so this backs up the idea, like, Gail sends back to me, she says, you know, Israel is the last of Western European colonists, or colonialism. It is the last colony. And to,
exactly.
And it was always going to be a thorn in the side of its neighbors. And, you know, I saw the whole thing with the sanctions against Iran today. And I'm just thinking, man, you know, when is the response going to be balanced by anyone when it comes to all these connected entities in this conflict? I mean, it's just so out of control. You know, Iran needs to find a way to power its cities because it doesn't have enough oil to pull out of the ground for itself.
Correct. And also, as one of the Iranian politicians made the point, he said, look, selling oil is how we make money. It's how we keep the state functioning. We can't afford to use it for our own lighting.
Right. Right.
And our own electricity.
Yeah. And
we have to sell it.
And you know, the funny thing about Iran, too, is, you know, as we saw during the protests that happened over there, the student protests and the green movement that was all happening there, there is a very, very tech-savvy modern population in Iran. Very, very savvy, very
right.
West. I mean, the young people, you know, and young people, I'm talking like under 40 even, you know,
mm-hmm,
are very Western when they're allowed to be. They're, you know, all the old things. They love our music. They love all that kind of stuff. They don't like Ahmadinejad himself. But the nuclear program
right.
has virtual blanket support because the people know that they need this. No matter how much I hate to see another nuclear power plant get built on this planet, for a country that can't power itself at all properly, who is so unstable because of the geopolitics of the world, they can't put solar panels up, man. They wouldn't last a day.
I mean, exactly. And the thing is, I mean, you know, it's interesting how America goes into conniption every time it's suggested that Iran may be doing any nuclear research at all of any kind. And yet, let's see. India has a bomb and is not a signatory to MPP. Pakistan has a bomb and is not a signatory to the MPP. Israel has hundreds of bombs and is not a signatory to the MPP.
Yeah.
But we get off on jumping all over Iran, who is a signatory to the MPP, and has allowed every inspection that has been requested of them.
And, you know, I think, you know, I love calling them I'm a dinner jacket. I just.
Yeah.
But, you know, the guy is a lunatic. But I don't think he's actually that dangerous of a lunatic. Because it's posturing. It's posturing. We've seen what happens when you stand up to, you know, the alliance, or whatever you want to call, you know, the United States and its backers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy's going to have to posture, you know, go, you know, we're going down a route, possibly. We have to make you think we might be going down there because it seems to be the only thing that keeps you sons of bitches out.
Exactly. I mean, I noticed that we haven't been jumping all over North Korea. We can call them all kinds of nasty names, but we're not threatening to invade them every other week. I wonder why that is. I think because maybe they could wipe out most of our troops stationed there with one bomb.
It's all just so backwards and out of scale. You know, this is where, you know, we talk about this being the third rail of politics, you know, and I always end up being uncomfortable when we get here because it ends up being, if you're just passively listening, that we're going on a run the bashing list of Israel. But it is the reality that these are, you know, it's not just one thing. It's not just two things. It's this consistent, you know, just kind of inhumane and law-breaking, you know, way that they've got. And it's just, it's...
Right.
So, you know, this conversation that we've had here tonight could be chopped and edited, and I could end up on the web somewhere being sitting there being labeled a mad anti-Semite.
Exactly.
Which is me too.
Which is always
a joke because it's like, okay, I'm backing the Palestinians in this thing, and aren't they Semites too? So, you know, it's
exactly.
Their own reality is just they're believing their own bullshit, and that's a scary thing when a country believes its own bullshit. Which I think we have a population in America that believes its own bullshit. And I call most of them Tea Partiers.
Well, this whole idea of, I believe it was actually Palin that made the point that, what a horrible thing that Obama isn't behind American exceptionalism. Lady, listen, that's not a good thing. I don't know if you understand what you're talking about. But American exceptionalism is not a good thing.
We
are not, we're not God's favorite children. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I don't think the Israelis are either.
There's a great show on BBC Radio that's been being replayed since like 1995, and it's called Old Harry's Game, and it takes place in hell, and it's this hysterical comedy thing, and just like in the last week, we were listening to one of them, and the Jeremy Hardy, who plays Satan, says, you know, he goes, I remember, you know, talking to the Almighty once, saying, you know, don't have a chosen people, you're just asking for trouble. But you know how stubborn he can be. And just the idea of choosing someone calling themselves the chosen, or the American exceptionalism that immediately creates an us and them, and you're setting up a conflict because you're claiming that other people are below you. That is the most surefire way to piss anyone off.
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of, well, you've heard Don McLean and Everybody Loves Me, Baby. You know the song, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that should be the new American anthem because that expresses exactly the way that we see ourselves. No land is beyond my claim when the land is seized in the people's name by evil men who rob and maim. If war is hell, I'm not to blame. Doesn't that sound like us?
Yeah, it sure does, man. It sure does. And Agnes is passing me on a question from Dave in the chat room that got by me. And, I mean, I assume this is slightly rhetorical, but is there any other religion that has its own homeland, city-state? And I believe that would be no.
Other than the Vatican? No.
Yeah, other than the Vatican.
The Vatican is the only one.
Yeah, and for me, that whole idea, that, like, going, well, our holy book says that this is our homeland, and to me it's like, your holy book isn't holy. It was written by men. That gives you no claim. Sorry. Unless you can show some sort of deed and title in Aramaic, the fact that some book that some people cobbled together to control people that has no basis in fact is not something that I am willing to actually entertain in the discussion at all.
Exactly. I mean, don't we think that the Native Americans who were sitting here for 10,000 years before the first paleface showed up, don't you think that the spirits told them that this is their land? I think so. And I think 10,000 years gives them residency over us.
Yeah. It's colonialism, man. Hey, mate, I've just found out that Bob actually wants to have a bit of a chat with me before we run out of time. But, man, great conversation. Thank you so much. We've taken up almost the entirety of the hour here, but it good stuff. I do love when you come in because you've got kind of like some of that Eastern European history and whatnot that I am a complete idiot on, and I always get a bit of an education. Thanks very much, mate.
Anytime, John.
All right,
my
brother.
Pleasure.
Take care, Koss. And,
take care.
And I do believe that we're going to have the one, the only Bob Kincaid pop up here in a second. Bob, you there? Oh, Bob.
I am here, John. Are you there?
I am here, man. Where are you? That sounds like a phone.
It is. I just crossed back into wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia. I'm on my way home.
Right on.
It's been a long, well, they've all been long days. But, you know, one of the lovely things about taking these trips, especially when you're in a car, is you get a chance to remind yourself why you hate commercial radio.
Has it been a nightmare of just nothing but right-wing corporate scum?
I've heard every bad focus grouped country song that's available to be heard in the United States. I just heard a dedication called in from a five-month-old boy who was born without half a brain. Yeah. No, it was half a heart. I'm sorry. And not to make light or anything, but Jesus Christ. And then earlier, I know you were verging over into the Israeli-Palestinian thing. I heard somebody interviewing the Israeli, I don't know, commerce minister or whatever it was, as he tried to explain why it is that Israel allows cinnamon to go into Gaza, but not cilantro. There is no list of contraband items. It is largely to do with where the items come from. You understand there could be very dangerous cilantro if it comes from Iran.
Mate, I know you've been busy, but since I've been on, the only thing that I can come to kind of sum any of this all up is Israel has fallen over the edge of believing their own bullshit.
Yeah, I heard that a little bit ago, and now what they've done is they have stared into the abyss. The abyss has stared back, and it's made them a little bit nuts.
Just a little?
And then that really is. You can have cinnamon, but you can't have cilantro. Well, you know, I guess nobody will be opening a Mexican restaurant in Gaza now.
Yeah, and a defensive. Go ahead, finish.
I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, and just like, you know, defensive gunshot wounds to the back of the head.
Right. Bob Buell stabbed himself 32 times.
It's absolutely crazy, Bob, how kind of just completely off the charts some of this is going. And if you had...
Well, you know, I haven't had a lot of time to do a lot of reading and research, the usual stuff that I like to do just because of the way the schedule runs when we go and do these things. But I guess we have a new verb.
Which is?
To get Helen Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And that one's been getting more and more under my skin as the days pass. It's pretty horrible, but... Sandra is of the opinion, and I think utter hope, that she just decided, you know what, it's time to cut all ties to anyone that can, you know, take any action against me, and give her a little time to brush the dust away, and I have a feeling she will start firing openly, because I have a feeling she's going, you know what, I'm 89 years old, don't have that much time left, they want to do this to me?
God, I thought she was 92.
Was it 92? I mean, she's a champion, whatever the age is.
And just for finally speaking up, but the thing is that's the point. That was not an editorial that she wrote for Hearst. That was not anything that happened within the context of her job. She was, if this was a sporting situation, it would be said that she had just been forced out because of off-the-field remarks.
And from what I understand, those remarks were recorded a while ago, so I'm getting the impression that people sat on this, waited for Israeli-Palestinian nerves to be nice and frayed again, and then bring it out.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but it was. I know it was a fix. It was a dirt job. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It was absolutely sickening. But I had a little fanboy moment this afternoon too. The reason I'm getting home so late. Everything wrapped up this morning at the Campaign for America's Future Now conference. But after that, this afternoon at 1, there was an address at the National Press Club that I just could not resist attending. Ms. Ashley Judd gave an address at the National Press Club lambasting mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
And without sounding too caveman, her Purdy.
Oh, yeah.
Real pretty. And real smart.
Yeah.
She dropped a rock on him.
Well, I was sent an article that I actually didn't get a chance to read by one of the listeners or one of the bloggers about her and the degree that she's gotten in the work that she's doing. And I didn't realize that she was going to be down there, you know, one of the many links that go by you while you're trying to do this thing. And, She's always been kind of a smart cookie. I mean, you know.
Oh, she's brilliant. And to hear her, and the whole audience was just sitting there, and it'll be on C-SPAN, and it'll be on, it'll be on C-SPAN at some point, so folks can watch it online. Dave Nywert from Crooks and Liars went down there with me, and Dave is a great guy. Super smart, good, you know, real journalist, long history, and he said he will have the video of her remarks, some of her re- and an article written about it up at Crooks and Liars in the next day or so.
Right on. Right on.
That'll be great. Bring some notice about it to Crooks and Liars. But the other thing about Ashley Judd that I wanted to tell you, John, there is, if you go over to ilovemountains.org, there's a new little 30-second PSA that's been produced, and she is the voiceover for it. And wow, what a powerful little piece of video that is!
Oh yeah,
it'll blow people's minds when they see it.
Right.
Just to give away a little hint, it's basically a redo of LBJ's Daisy ad, only referencing mountaintop removal instead of nuclear devastation.
Oh, nice! Very nice.
Yeah, complete with the little girl pulling the petals off the daisy.
Oh, yeah, I see the player popping up here. So the listeners, you know, ilovemountains.org, go and check it out. You know, man, I really think no matter how much we feel like we're so overwhelmed with things, I really feel like you all are actually making real progress with the whole mountaintop removal campaign. There has been more kind of national spotlight and more people. I mean, you know, was it Angelina Jolie that came down to the one thing and got arrested? Or no, it wasn't her. It was
Daryl Hannah.
Daryl Hannah. The right wing will be like, oh, who cares what stars think? But, you know, they are citizens, and they are citizens that can draw cameras. And Ashley...
Well, and where Ashley is concerned, Ashley is a real, live, honest-to-goodness hillbilly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She comes out of eastern Kentucky.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about smart, she just finished a graduate degree at Harvard.
That's what the article, the gist of that article was that I was sent, was talking about her just finishing off her degree. And, you know, I guess, you know, now she's going to become a campaigner, and great, you know, and for her to be, you know, a southern, you know, hillbilly girl, that's going to get a lot more people in the South to actually stay for a minute and listen. And, you know, it only takes, you know, one really, really important fact to grab hold of someone to get them to really come in and have a look at the issue. So, you know, I think this
And,
is...
you know, that's something I worked on these last couple of days in D.C. is helping people to understand that there's no difference between Tony Hayward and Don Blankenship, and that they're both engaged in the same filthy business. Yeah, one's coal, one's oil, but it's all deadly.
Well, I've been doing a whole thing the last couple of days how, you know, we use that term, you know, we're addicted to oil, but really, it is an addiction. An addiction is something that you can't live without. And we are addicted to oil like it's heroin and coal like it's crack. And the dealer can abuse us, and screw us and rip us off as much as he wants, and we'll still come down, get on our knees, and say, dealer, dealer, give me please.
You know, that's the front end of a song, I think. Oil is like opium, and coal is like crack. Oil is our opium, and coal is our crack. We got to work on this, John.
Well, man, you've got the start. You've got the starter there. You know, as I watch, you know, you and I talked off air over the last couple of weeks how we were getting frustrated with some people who even live down in the Gulf who still will try and defend the oil industry in this. And you're just like, on, really, really, after all
well, see,
of this.
I was heading off to bed last night watching a few minutes of Anderson Cooper, professional journalist. And he was interviewing the brother of one of the guys who died on the platform in the explosion. And he was talking about the fact that, well, sure, they can call safety timeouts and they'll shut everything down. But if you do that, then they'll fire you and you'll never work again. And I'm thinking, gee, I wonder if that might be because you have a daggum union. And then I thought, wait a minute. I think I remember the same story from April
this year out of the hills and hollers of western Raleigh County. Well, sure, we could tell them that the mine was gassy, but if we shut down, they'd fire.
Yep. Yep. Keep them scared.
Same, same. Just because Tony Hayward used which fork to knows which fork to use with the shrimp doesn't make him any less a monster than Don Blankenship.
Hey, both of them just sit back after something like this happens and are like, well, yeah, thanks for the flesh.
Yeah, exactly. Well, John, I'm going to run out of cell here in a minute, but I wanted to call in and thank you especially for getting in the saddle these last three nights. It sure is nice for folks not to have to tolerate a rerun. And I really, really appreciate what you've done.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, man, and had a great time. Had an awesome time with Agnes and I kind of doing like we used to do. And it's been great fun. The callers have been really, really warm and welcoming. And it's been a great 3 days. And can't wait to hear you tomorrow night.
I will be back at it with a vengeance.
All right.
See, I have to behave myself when I'm out there in public and everything, and I can't bust out all cranky.
Well, mate, I did cranky for both of us the last 3 days. So safe travels home, and can't wait to hear you on air tomorrow night. Be safe, brother.
I can't wait either. If I just get home before somebody, this yahoo in front of me just lost a big plastic bag of either garbage or his... all his worldly possessions, and he doesn't even know he lost it.
Uh-oh. All right, Bob, put the phone down.
If it was something important, I'm going to chase him down and tell him he did.
All right, man, put the phone down and drive. We'll talk to you soon.
Later, John.
All right, brother.
See you, everybody.
And that was the one, the only Bob Kincaid, and we're running up on the end of it. So thanks, Agnes. Thanks, Texas Betsy. Thanks, Sue. Thanks, Lottie. Thanks to Ben Birch, the White Rose Society, for the streaming and the archives. We couldn't do this without him. Thanks to Scott Barry at B1 Ladder Productions for so much of the music that I have. And Coal River Mountain Watch, Coal River Wind, great supporters of this network. And as Bob said, working very hard to try and end the disgrace that is mountaintop removal mining. And before we get out of here, as we always say, Gina, it's all for you.